Hi there. Welcome back to the Real Film Chronicles podcast. As always, I'm Nathan.
And I'm Brian.
And in this week's very special episode, we're going to be taking a look at a little film called Reptile.
Reptile, directed by Grant Singer and starring none other than Benicio del Toro, Justin Timberlake, and Alicia Silverstone, amongst a whole host of other folks in there, but you might recognize a few faces. And
A bunch of that guys. Yeah. That guy, I know him from stuff. I know that guy from something.
Oh, man. As always, this is your spoiler warning. If you haven't seen the movie and you're interested in checking it out, I believe it is streaming on Netflix. It is a Netflix original movie, so it's out there.
It's got the red end, yeah.
Check it out or not. Either way, listen to the episode, and we'll be going into spoilers, whatever we do there. So there's your warning. Reptile. I read the description on this, and it mentioned a real estate agent in Scarborough. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe this is a little bit of a Canadian connection film here, but it's...
Some Canadiana.
It's just like... Because, you know, in my mind, it's like, oh, it's like Enemy from a few years ago from Villeneuve.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's a Canadian director, and it was like filmed in Toronto and some of the surrounding areas.
Well, one of the plot points is they actually went and met, they mentioned Mississauga. It was a Mississauga address, and they went and met in a hotel in Mississauga. It's like, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. And that would have been cool if this was actually Scarborough, but it wasn't. It was another Scarborough somewhere in the U.S.
Yeah, who cares?
I was so disappointed. I didn't even look it up afterwards to see where in the U.S. it was or if it was even a real city. Even when the movie was starting and be like, oh, that's definitely not Scarborough. Maybe
definitely not Scarborough.
I was like, maybe Del Toro's name is Scarborough or something. Because when I looked at the description, I didn't even read what it was. It was just like, all I saw was the word Scarborough and I was there, but... No, this is what is this? Is a crime thriller drama?
Yeah.
I mean, I want to say right off the bat, it was refreshing to go into a different genre of film, and based on like where we watched this, coming hot off the heels of Halloween, spooky season, like both you and I have watched like nothing but horror movies for the past 30 days. When this episode eventually airs, we'll probably be a couple months out of that, so it might be a little bit weird. But it was kind of nice sitting down with a genre that I don't necessarily watch all that often, or I don't go to my way to watch, especially a movie that's clocking in at like two hours, 15 minutes or so.
Okay, it did feel a little bit long. I was...
Yeah.
Maybe that's a spoiler for some of our opinions in the movie, but like partway through the movie, I'm like, is this... I checked, I had to pause to go to the bathroom or something, and I looked at the time and laughed, and I'm like, really? There's still that much time left?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel like there's that much more. I felt like I'd been down here for a while, man.
Yeah, it was definitely getting a little long in the tooth.
Yeah. I
mean. But I think generally, I mean, overall, like, impressions here, first impressions were like, I think I enjoyed watching this movie. I was into it. I didn't find myself checking my phone too often. I don't know if you use that as a barometer to like when you're watching movies at home, especially Netflix. All right, some background. Netflix will talk about how their competition may not be other streamers and like movie services. They are for sure.
Yeah.
But they also consider like other forms of entertainment their competition. Like your phone and like apps on your phone are a direct competitor to Netflix, right? Because they know you will just go do something else. You can easily just turn this movie off and load up your phone. Or a lot of people watch movies on their phone. If you get a notification from a different app, you're going to switch over to that app and forget about the movie, right?
Huh. I hadn't thought about that, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost sacrilegious to think about watching a movie on your phone. I can't imagine, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I use that as a barometer. I always, when I'm sitting downstairs in my kind of movie room downstairs, or the rec room downstairs rather, and I always have my phone kind of beside me, beside the two controllers, and I use that as a barometer. Like very, very rarely am I ever tempted in the middle of a movie to go and start looking at my phone. And I know that, I think you do it a little bit more often than I do.
Without a doubt.
I know that if I'm going for my phone during a movie, like that's, I am not engaged at all. It takes a lot to lose my engagement to that point. but I always have my phone right beside me. So, and there's that temptation there. And I know a couple times, in the past couple, only a couple times, it only happens a couple times a year, really. Whereas like, I find myself like, I look over my hands, like on my phone and like, yeah, okay, you're losing me here. You're losing me. Yeah.
It's the another barometer I find is, I mean, obviously with the phone distraction, but I'll make a bowl of popcorn at the beginning of the movie, and it takes me about 25 minutes to go through that bowl of popcorn. That's guaranteed 100% focus on the movie because there's no phone opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
After that, if I can go another like half hour without the phone, I know I'm hooked on this movie. But if you finish your snack and you're immediately reaching for that phone, it's bad news. Reptile. So what were your overall impressions of this? Like, how'd you walk into this? Were you interested in it beforehand? Was it just kind of like the buzz of the latest Netflix movie coming out? Like, how did you end up watching Reptile?
Well, it was like, I was watching something else on Netflix and this ad came up for Reptile. Like, and I'm going to say like the ad looked really good. And it was Benicio Del Toro, Justin Timberlake, you know, a bunch of other recognizable names, and the way it was all edited together. Oh, this looked like a really interesting kind of crime thriller. And I was actually looking for, this was actually on my radar. It was one of those Netflix films that was, or just movies in general that was on my radar. So I was going in with maybe a bit higher expectations. I enjoyed the film overall. I think it fell a little bit short from what I was expecting. I was hoping for this to, it looked like a diamond in the rough is what it looked like.
Yeah, yeah.
And it ended up being just like, it's a solid, you know, crime thriller, but it didn't excel. Didn't really stand out. It was a great middle of the road, a great, maybe Sunday afternoon movie, I think is kind of the terminology we tend to use. I think there was, for me, I think there was a bit of an issue. I think we touched on it before, but with the pacing and maybe with the editing felt really jarring and really abrupt.
Okay.
And that can work really well. I just felt like, yeah, I don't usually notice things like editing. Like if editing is done right, it's typically something like me won't notice when they're watching a film. Right. But the editing was done in such a way that were like, I noticed it, and not in a good way. Like, oh, that's really cool. Like, you know, Edgar Wright's, you know, doing something crazy, the transition on a train ride from the city to the country is like, yeah, you notice the editing in a good way. I was noticing the editing in a bad way here. Just like, I don't know, something felt like there were missing scenes, or felt like maybe a bit of a pacing issue where some of the scenes maybe could have been cut or should have been extended, but something about the pacing editing just felt a little bit off to me. There was a lot of ambiguity in the movie as well, which I didn't mind actually. Some people online, I was looking at some forums, some discussions where people like, oh, they wanted more definitive answers to what was going on. I actually liked that they left it open where you had to kind of connect the dots yourself. I didn't mind that. I really liked that part of it actually. Felt like some of the thrillers of old, like I think there was like a golden era of like late 90s, early 2000s, you know, thriller, the crime thriller genre, like usually starring Morgan Freeman as a jaded police officer involved in there somehow. And this felt like almost like a throwback to that, but didn't quite reach those heights of like something like Along Came a Spider or something from the 90s or early 2000s.
Yeah, not to put you on the spot, are there any like scenes where like the editing, like any examples you could throw out there where like some of that pacing and editing in a scene did not work for you?
I'm trying to think. There were some, I think when they were in the house, showing it off at first, there were some scenes when they were driving around, like when he was doing the investigation out to the old church.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was just some interesting, like, I think when the dude was, what was the guy's name? Eli, I think, was like making his soup. There were just like, there was between certain transitions, like between like, oh, when they were going out, like that scene felt like it was too long. The soup scene, it was just making soup, but like, in between like doing the police work and then going to his like domestic stuff, they're going out line dancing and doing some other things. I really like that showing like the actual life of this guy. It's like, oh, he has a life outside of police work. Like that was really cool.
You're talking about Del Toro's character here.
Del Toro's character, Nichols, I think his name was, right?
Tom Nichols.
Yeah. Nichols had, he had an actual life. He's doing kitchen renovations. That hit home for me. I just did kitchen renovations last year. So I was like, yeah. And it's funny, like when you go to people's houses, it's like, oh yeah, I really like, this counter looks really nice. Or like, I really like this island. And during the crime scene investigation, when he's doing that, it's like, that felt really real. But yeah, when transitioning between those things, and some of the scenes just felt like a couple, like maybe like 10 seconds, maybe a minute too long.
Yeah.
Just here and there. And just the transitions between the scenes, I don't know. It felt really jarring, but not in a way that was intentional, right?
Yeah, that's fair. One of the scenes that, yeah, I wanted to talk about, talking about the kitchen renovations was,
yeah,
I really appreciate this about the movie where Tom Nichols, like Benicio del Toro here, they're interviewing Justin Timberlake, like in his house. They're going, sort of going through the crime scene a little bit. And it's just him and his partner, like in the kitchen, sort of talking to Timberlake. And he goes off to like take care of a phone call or something. And they're just kind of sitting there chilling. And he turns on the tap, the faucet in the kitchen. And the water doesn't come on. And he determines that it's a motion activated thing.
Yeah, it's a sensor. Yeah.
And he plays with that. And he actually takes a picture of it like secretly, like kind of secretly, right? Yeah. And I loved that disconnect. Well, not a disconnect. I love that connection with his, like his personal life. You would go into other people's houses and see things that you'd want to implement in your own home, but also yeah, like how maybe uninvested he is in this possible case that he's looking at, where it's just like, oh, we're not going to take the extra opportunity to talk about like interviewing this guy or figuring out who's the murderer. It's like, we want to, like, I'm focused on personal items here of like, this is the faucet I want installed. And then we see scenes later where he actually gets the new faucet delivered and installed into his home. And
yeah, I don't think it's him being uninvested in the case. I think it's just showing that, oh yeah, he's a real person with a life that's going on outside of the police.
Yeah, yeah.
Cause like so often in these movies, you see like this person, like literally like all they do, like the cop characters, it's like they go to work, they go home and sleep and they come back to work. It's like, no, this guy has a wife. He's doing kitchen renovations. He's got like when they're at the, they're looking for the car and they're going to use car lots to see if it was sold. The car that was used committing the crime, the murder at the beginning, which we totally skipped over. but then he's like, oh, there's a truck next to him, like a Chevy Silverado. I was like, oh yeah. And he starts asking the dealer about the specifications on the truck. And he's like, oh yeah. That's like, he's looking for a truck to get for himself since he's there.
Yeah, yeah.
Guy's asking, like, how are you going to afford this? Like, all the overtime, man. It's like, what do you think we're working the overtime for? I was like, yeah, that's like, of course, because if you're on the job, it's like, he felt like a real person then, right? It's like it humanized him in a way that you don't often see, where it's always like the workaholics who are like 24/7 married to their job. It's like, no, this guy actually had a loving relationship with his wife, which is another great thing. Alicia Silverstone is back. I don't know what she's been doing lately, but she's back here. And like, I thought it was a great portrayal of a relationship between two people, like in their, they're supposed to be like in their 40s, yeah, where they were like, you could tell that they were still in love, but there was like, they weren't like all lovey-dovey all the time, like a 20 something couple, like newlywed couple would be all over, like they, it felt like they'd lived with each other for 20 years and kind of knew those ins and outs, knew each other on that level, and there was like a shorthand between them. That was like a really compelling portrayal of a really realistic, believable portrayal of like a couple in their 40s who'd been together for like 20 years. It's like, yeah, like, of course.
And it's you get a really good sense of like how much they trust each other.
Yeah.
And like their relationship, because there is a scene there where he's coming home and you get this foreboding sense like someone is outside the house because he's out on a call and like her life is at danger. Like you're thinking he's going to come home and her body's going to be there, but it's like, no.
Oh, yeah. I thought they were doing a fake out. Yeah.
Yeah, they sort of like, she has a gun, because there's all this runny water, she shoots the pool as a warning shot to this guy mulling about the outdoors.
I think in a conversation later when they were line dancing, I think she was actually aiming for him and she missed during her explanation. Like she was.
Oh, I thought she said that she shot a warning shot.
Oh, maybe I got it wrong, but I thought it was like, oh no, she was shooting at him and it was a moving target and she missed him and he stopped because he heard the gunshot.
Yeah, that would also, I mean, it would also make sense too, for sure.
But it was also nice to like show that her character wasn't just some damsel in distress. It's like, somebody's coming around my house. It's like, she lived with a cop and they've been through some stuff already with like, his partner had been like brought up on corruption charges and she said that they had been targeted you know, before. So like, she'd been through some stuff as well. And she's like, she's not just like, she hears a sound at night. She's like, no, I'm not going to just go to the front door, you know, with my hands in my pockets. I'm coming loaded. Right. Yeah.
But I think it's also that relationship. There's other scenes too. And the other one that stood out to me is it's almost crucial to Del Toro's character here, where he plays it so cool all the time, right? I mean, it's the cop demeanor, but like, he doesn't get excited. He doesn't get frustrated. Like it's like he's hiding something all the time, like his true reactions.
He's got a great poker face.
And so later, and he's like, it probably comes along with the job, but there's later on, he's coming downstairs. They're in they're at the cop party there, the guy's retirement or whatever it is. I can't remember what it was, but he comes downstairs and they're all playing poker. They're all having a good time. Silverstone is there. His wife is there at the table and he comes down. No one will notice if he's being weird or not, but she slowly picks up on him, like acting differently. Very minutely,
a little bit of a look, right?
Right?
She gives him that little look. It's like, of course, like, yeah. Only like a couple who've been together for like 20 years. It's like, she looks at him, is like, oh yeah, something's not right. And there's like something that passes between them. Right. It's like little touches like that that made this, it was frustratingly close to being a great crime thriller. There was so many little touches like that, that I really loved, but yeah, just something a little bit too generic about the overall affair as well.
One of the criticisms I saw online, one of the reviews I read on Letterboxd, was that it felt like you took a movie, like a classic classic crime thriller movie, and fed it into an AI bot and had it spit out like a new script. And it's like, that's kind of what you end up with.
You know what? Yeah, I can totally see that. There were a lot of cliches, a lot of things, like familiar tropes, but more than just familiar, felt like almost retreaded, right?
Yeah. And I don't know. I'm just looking at the writers here, and like on Letterboxd, you have Del Toro has a writing credit.
I noticed that as well. Yeah.
Grant Singer, the director, has a writing credit, and Benjamin Brewer with a little more experience, it seems, with a couple feature films and writing. But yeah, it's like writing was maybe not the standout here. There's not like a big veteran here, at least credited, at least. And Grant Singer, the director, I think this is their feature film debut.
Okay.
It sounds like they've
okay.
done a few other items here, like a lot of music. I think music videos and whatnot. So, which I think is like a common like career path from into movies. And it's like a lot of our favorite directors like started off making music videos, and it's like maybe their first entries. Like, to be fair, I think this one is a pretty solid entry. It's like it's not a bad movie, and it's like future movies are probably just only going to get better from here on out. It's like Grant Singer, I think, is probably someone to keep an eye on, especially if he sticks around into the crime thriller here.
I would love to see, it would be really interesting to see if in 10 years he came back and like redirected, like remake of this, what it would look like. I think like because the bones of this are really solid. And that when you said that, it's like, yeah, this feels almost like somebody like trying to like finding their own voice, right? They're kind of, you know, kind of, there's some stumbles, I think, in terms of some of the storytelling and some of the editing and some of the, it was really cool. Like some of the song choices were really neat. Some of the music choices, music cues, is like, I wish they'd done more with that. It felt like somebody who was like just a little bit unsure, right? It's like, it felt like somebody, if there was a filmmaker with a bit more confidence, they would have, you know, really played with that, with those musical cues a lot more. Like you look at something like, you know, Martin Scorsese in any of his work, but specifically in Goodfellas, and you see how his use of music combined with the scenes, and you see that confidence in the filmmaker, somebody who'd been, by that point, had been around for several decades. And, you know, Singer might, you know, probably will develop that. It's a matter of confidence and finding out your own style and finding out what works. And that only comes through time. Right. So yeah, this is not, it's not going to be, I don't think, on my top 10 list this year, but this is a really strong debut film. I'm not going to lie. Like this is really, really solid. And like you said, like I'm excited to see where he goes. Like I would love to see him do some more crime thrillers in the future and see how that style evolves and how that maturity, that confidence is going to, you know, have a positive effect on his filmmaking going forward.
How did you feel about Justin Timberlake's role here, his acting job? Is this, I mean, he's been in a decent number of movies, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, is he, should he be in these roles? Did he do a good job here?
Should he be? Should, do we call the movie police on Justin Timberlake?
The movie police. Well, you know,
get him in movie jail. No, I was dubious the very first time I heard that Justin Timberlake was going to be in anything. I think, I don't know whether Southland Tales was his first movie he was ever in. But I remember I was dubious back in the day, but he's proven himself to be a really, really strong actor. I mean, you look at him in The Social Network.
Yeah.
And like, it was directed by David Fincher, who's a master. You know, when you get somebody at that level, it goes a long way towards the acting as well. But Justin Timberlake's an accomplished actor, and I liked his role here as a little bit more subdued than a lot of his other roles that I've seen him in.
I think that's where it was kind of throwing me off, is that it was pretty subdued.
Like, you expect him to be a bit more out there. Like, some of the other characters he's played tend to be a bit more boisterous, a bit more bombastic.
Yeah, a little more animated.
I think he's got really great comedic timing, too. You look at some of the SNL digital shorts he did with Andy Samberg and his crew, like Dick in a Box and like all that kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, you expect him to be almost more over the top, and to see him in a subdued role like this. I don't think it was his best role ever, but I think, you know, I would like to see him in more roles like this. I think, like, yeah, it was really good to see him stretching his acting muscles. But this guy's got genuine acting. He's one of those people that, you know, you kind of hate so much because, like, they're so talented. He's obviously musically talented. He's, you know, a talented actor. He's got the comedic timing. You know, he's just like one of those people. Is like, you want to hate him, but he also seems so charming as well. It's like, yeah, you can't even hate him for being so talented.
how about that scene, which turned out to be a dream, where Del Toro is now touring the house that the murder happened in, but because Timberlake is a real estate agent, like his his family, like they have a whole company here, and he's like giving a tour of the house. It feels so weird at first because it's like, Del Toro, you've been in this house before, but now it's listed for sale because the murder.
Yeah.
And clearly Del Toro, he doesn't care about it be a murder house. Doesn't bother him. And how's the tension in that scene? How did that scene work for you? Because when it was like a dream sequence, if that came to an end, be like, wow, I can't believe they threw like a 5-minute dream sequence into this movie with that kind of tension. It was like, it felt a little forced, whereas like, oh man, it's not like there's other dream sequences going on here, but it was like, I was shocked when, you know, he looks up.
They were playing it straight the whole time, yeah.
Playing it real straight, and Timberlake shoots him in the gut and be like, in my mind, that happened. Like, that was happening.
I thought he might survive the climax. That. And that, because because the movie was so long, like that felt like, okay, this is the time. It felt in my brain. It's like, okay, we're at the time for the climax here, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But no, it was a...
He just wakes up and we got another hour left on the movie.
To be honest, like that scene, and that's the thing too, like that scene built tension so great. Like Will Grady, who was played by Justin Timberlake, it was his wife at the beginning, her murder, who started this whole chain of events. That's what Nichols and his partner were investigating. And that's what led to the uncovering of this whole real estate scheme where Will Grady and his mom... were in bed with the police, where they would plant, and the whole scheme. I liked how the whole scheme too. I'm going off on a tangent here. The whole scheme was like it was laid out piece by piece, but it wasn't. There was never like a scene, an exposition scene where Benicio del Toro and his partner sit down. It's like, well, they did this and then this and it laid out the whole scheme. It was like you have to pay attention to the whole movie, where like the cops, the dirty cops, were planting drugs in the house that led them. Like there was a law that led them then to have civil forfeiture. Forfeiture where they could just seize the house, and then they partner with Will Grady and his girlfriend and his mom to sell the houses and turn a profit, and they were all splitting the money. It was a huge scam. I like that. But going back to your question about that scene, that was one of my favorite scenes of the whole movie. I'm glad you brought that up. It was like great tension building scene it was just so weird. Like, you know, Nichols was going back. He knows a murder happened in this place. He investigated the murder, and now he's having the real estate agent who was the husband of the murder victim and a suspect in that murder case as a real estate agent. And there was something so awkward about that. And the tension was building up, and you saw him put the get his gun on him, and he had the thumb drive with him, and he's going to confront him. And it's just like the tension building up, and he goes and he gets, you know, Justin Timberlake, Will Grady pulls out the gun and shoots Benicio del Toro. I thought it was gonna be one of those like showdowns at the end,
yeah,
where like the hero gets shot and he gets hurt and they end up both in the hospital or maybe dying.
Yeah.
And when he wakes up in the dream, I'm like, yeah, there are. I had kind of mixed emotions because there are ways to do dream sequences and it was all just a dream and make it really do it really well. And there are some where it feels kind of cheap and it's just a way to kind of, you know, it's a cheap way to build tension. And I thought this was somewhere in between those two. I didn't feel it was super, super cheap, but I didn't feel it was really, really effective either. And that maybe it was just because of the pacing of the film as well, where it's like, although it's like the climactic showdown and he gets shot. It's like, oh man. And he's going to get, and he's already sent the files off that prove the whole scam and he's going to die, but he's going to be exonerated in the end. Like everyone's going to be arrested who's involved in the scheme. It's like, okay, they're going for one of those kind of redemptive arcs. But no, it's just like, no, he woke up. It was just his anxiety. I understand what the scene was going for and the anxieties and the specific, you know, psychology of the character that they were trying to bring out. And it's like, okay, I get it. But I don't know. It just, it was in between. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great, that transition either. I don't know. It was a great scene in and of itself, but in the overall, like having it where it was, how it was stitched together, it left something to be desired for me.
That's pretty fair. I think in the greater context, like there's a lot of good scenes like that.
Yeah.
But obviously, like in the greater context of the movie, that feels overly long and a little convoluted. It doesn't have that consistency that those scenes would really get to shine. Because even like that scene we mentioned before where he's coming home, like the tension was so real during that.
That was another great scene. I think that's the whole thing. There are so many great scenes in this movie. It just felt like the way they were trying to piece them together, that's where it gets lost for me in the editing process. We're just like the transition between the scenes or the denouement at the end of a scene. It felt like things were getting cut short or they're dragging on a little bit too long. And I think like that's the kind of thing that obviously, you know, you have an editor working on that as well. You know, the editor and the director are working to varying degrees, collaborating on that pacing. But again, I feel like that's something like, you know, somebody with a bit more experience and a bit more confidence would be, oh, we'll cut this scene like 5 seconds shorter and it makes it entirely, completely different. Or we'll use this take, like instead of just having a wide shot, we'll have an insert of a close-up of a face. And it just like, it changes the entire feel or the pace of the scene. And that's the kind of thing that comes with experience. So I think like we're seeing a lot of raw talent here, but we're just like not tempered by the experience. So I don't want to put the film down because I did have a fun time with it. I did have like, I always love the thriller and like part of the fun of it is trying to figure out like the whodunit, right? What, and all the different misdirects and red herrings, like, oh, you think it's the husband, ex-husband, but no, they're not divorced. You think it's the current boyfriend. You think it's this weird stalker guy named Eli who is like just creepy as hell.
Yeah. Well, it's such a huge misdirect and he has his finger on the pulse of a lot of things and he knows a lot of the cops are corrupt and he even calls out the history of Del Toro's cop having in his involvement with different cover-ups that he wasn't necessarily directly involved in, but he chose to stay silent on.
I like that too. When you were talking about Nichols having that poker face, right?
Yeah.
When they're interviewing Eli and Eli's obviously done some research on the cops who were involved in this case. And he's like, you know, like how did you not know that your partner was involved in all this shady stuff for so long? It's obviously like, I think what they, maybe I'm wrong. You can tell me if this is what you got out of it as well, but that Nichols partner from his past precinct, he was involved in some illegal goings on. Nichols wasn't involved directly, but he knew about it and kept his mouth shut. It was like the thin blue line kind of thing, right?
Well, I think that was, for sure. That's what I got out of it. I think that was important to understand too, because for the finish of the movie, he's unraveling another corrupt cop situation of people he knows and trusts. Here we go again. Yeah, and this time he's elected, like he will say something, like he's going to take action instead of staying silent again.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of his overall character arc throughout the film.
Okay, so this is what I like. So the movie is like ambiguous enough. It trusted viewers to like piece these things together. But that scene where Eli's trying to throw him off guard, right? Where obviously Nichols hasn't told his partner there about his whole history. And you could see Benicio del Toro's acting is like a masterclass of acting, where you see like, yeah, he's playing it super cool and super cool. You can see like it hits him, right? But he's like, and you can see like, oh no, he's gonna ignore that and just like be super calm and cool and collected and answer back to him. It's like, oh, you see, he's got his cop face on. It's like, that's really, really cool in terms of character building, but also just like, it's a masterclass in acting in that one scene just from Benicio del Toro, right?
I don't think anyone has a better like subtle poker face in acting than Del Toro.
Oh, he's got a great face. Yeah.
Like there's so many scenes of him just like reacting to different news. Even his partner, who I think is not involved in anything, he's just like, you know what? I decided I'm going to get married. And like Del Toro doesn't get excited. He doesn't show anything until he realizes, oh, this is real. Like this is actually happening. But yeah, he can joke around with the guy. It's just like his face, it's all in his eyes, right? And the movie definitely knows who they have on board and they know when they can zoom in. And there are a lot of close-ups there, especially with Del Toro and his eyes reacting. And you're like,
oh yeah,
that was a smart decision.
It's about subtlety, right? It's like with Benicio del Toro, he can do the bombastic over the top performances, like in Usual Suspects and things like that. But yeah, like he can do so much. Like you don't realize how much is going on with his face or with his eyes until you see like, you know, a B or C class movie, right? And you see like kind of workaday actors or journeyman actors. And then you see like somebody like Del Toro at the top of his game. Also got to give props, if we're talking about acting, like Alicia Silverstone. Like, I don't know, like I associate her with like more kind of the lighthearted comedies and like rom-coms and stuff.
For sure.
Back in the day. And then she was obviously in one of the Batman movies. Was it Batman and Robin?
Batman and Robin, yeah.
But I was like, it was always like more comedic. And to see her like in this serious role and to see her, you know, up against, you know, on screen with somebody like Del Toro holding her own. And there were so many little subtleties in her performance as well. Like you said, in that poker scene when they're, you know, at the bar together, at the beginning when they're doing the, I love like how he was workshopping ideas with her with a case. She was like, he was bouncing ideas off of her, or just when they were talking about the kitchen stuff, or like the one scene, because Del Toro, you can tell he's getting a little bit jealous of this younger, good looking contractor who's chatting up his wife. And he ends up, she mentions, I guess, the line dancing nights to this guy, and this guy shows up, or country dance. I don't know if it's line dancing, but country dancing. He shows up and he comes over and says hi to Del Toro. And Lucy Silverstone gets up and walks away, and the Del Toro, I can't remember what he says to him.
Is that Peter over there, a contractor?
Oh yeah.
What's he doing here?
I might have told him about it.
Okay.
Well, damn, that was a lot more fun than I remembered. I haven't done that since I was a kid.
Hey,
how are you?
I saw the owner of Zuzu. Should I tell her about my bags?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Go on,
How's that new kitchen treating you?
You find her attractive?
Which one?
How far would you go?
Excuse me?
Are you willing to die for it?
I don't know what we're talking about here, Tom.
You don't know what the fuck I'm talking about?
No, absolutely no
idea. Oh shit, you're fucking cute. I'm warning you, man. Don't let me fucking catch you.
How'd it go?
Done. Should we hit the floor?
I'm okay. Peter, want to go?
No, I'm gonna sit this one out.
Huh? Okay.
It's super intimidating. Like, and it's said in as few words as possible because his wife is going to be walking back at any moment. And he just instills fear into this dude with such, like, it just does it so well. And the guy, he's reacting at first. He's just like, I don't know what we're talking about here. He's just like, yes, you do. And then he continues intimidating. He's just
It was such a great scene where he's like, I love that. Where he's like, he's not a character. Like Nicolas Cage's character, like Nicolas Cage would have played that completely differently, probably, completely different. You can see, like, you picture Nicolas Cage in something like, was it Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans? You see him as a cop going nuts. But no, Benicio del Toro does it the opposite. He goes like super subtle and super just like super intense, I think is the word. It's just like there's an intensity.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, the words he uses were super kind of benign. He never says like, oh, like stay away from my wife or like, you know, I know what you're trying to do. I wish it was just great. Super, super subtle. But the guy at the end, he knows exactly what Del Toro is talking about or what Nichols is talking about. And you can see, like, I love that actor did a great job too. You see I can't remember the actor's name, but he did such a great job. It was like, you can see in his face. Oh, was that maybe Thad Luckinbill?
I couldn't tell Peter? You.
Yeah, I'm just going through the IMDb right now. I'm just looking at some of these. I think that was a dude. He's one of those guys. You've seen him in other stuff before. But yeah, like the little, like that's the thing too. Is like such another great scene, but it was just the way that the scenes were stitched together. There were other great actors as well. The guy who played Wally, Dominic Lombardozzi. I don't know if I've seen him in other stuff.
Who is Wally?
Wally's that kind of, he's the cop who's starting that separate security company. He looks kind of like a bulldog. Big dude, bald. He's one of the bad dude, the corrupt cops who's in on this whole real estate scheme.
Yeah.
But he, like all these characters, like he felt really believable as like a 40 something kind of jaded cop who'd seen all this stuff. And you could see it's like, of course they're going corrupt because they've been doing this for 20 years and they're going to, you know, they're not getting paid huge amounts of money. They're going to retire in a small pension. It's a small town, a smaller community. It's like, they're getting jaded. And you can see it's like, oh, they didn't start off probably corrupt. It's probably something that happened over time. They brought some sympathy to these characters. Like you see, like when they're all hanging out at those parties with their spouses,
I felt like
we were just like, we're literally eavesdropping. I felt like I've been at some of those parties before, right? I felt like a real family gathering with family and friends around, and just like the way they're interacting, there was like a shorthand between some of the actors. It's like, oh yeah, this feels like a real lived in universe, real authenticity to those scenes between the characters. All those side actors, not side actors, supporting actors, I guess. Like you're saying that there's that one scene at the end with that poker game and Captain Allen, played by Eric Bogosian. I'm probably butchering that. He's one of those dudes. I've seen him in everything before. He's in so much stuff that I could not name, but I know that actor. But there's a great scene where there's this car that was involved in the crime. They've been looking for it. And Benicio del Toro, Nichols, he goes out to the garage of Captain Allen to get a beer. And he sees this car. And it's the Cadillac. And it's yellow, but it was purple.
Chrysler,
the Chrysler. And he opens the hood and he's pulling, like, underneath the hood. They didn't have time to paint, so it was purple underneath. So he finds the car. So he knows. And then Captain Allen comes out. So Captain Allen knows that he knows. And they know, each of them know. But then when he comes out of the garage again, Captain Allen's back at the table dealing the deck, and Benicio del Toro walks out. Nichols walks out, and he calls across the room, "Are you in or are you out?"
Yeah,
it's a little bit on the nose, right?
Because
he knows there's a double entendre going there. There's a deeper meaning, but it was just again that tension scene, and I love that the characters saying one thing but meaning another, and there's a dialogue going on. Like there's two levels of dialogue going on, even if it was a bit on the nose, but it keeps asking them, are you in or are you out? And you know what he's asking them. You know he's asking them, really, not as he in the poker game, but are you going to be, are you going to like either A, keep your mouth shut, or B, be part of this scheme? Just really, really great, great scene. Great tension in that scene. All the actors were just like, it was just a great job all around.
And speaking of being a little on the nose, at the final, shots of the movie, earlier in the movie, we see Del Toro, his character has a wound on his hand, right? And he has it wrapped throughout most of the movie.
Yeah.
At the very, very end, after everything's resolved, he's taking steps to like heal his hand. And I don't know what I saw it listed somewhere online. It's like some kind of thing. And it's like he's peeling off like the second skin that was there to like heal his wound. And it was just like, there's the name of the movie right there, Reptile Shedding Its Skin. It's like he's finally, just as he's decided not to stay silent and complicit in his corrupt crime, his corrupt cop friends. Like, he's now able to, that, ooh, I think that wound was like a literal thing where it's just like, it's not healing because of the choices he's made. Now he's made the right choice to, you know, stop these guys from doing their crime. And now he's able to heal on.
Yeah. I was looking at that online. Apparently it's paraffin wax treatment. It's actually for,
yeah, that's it.
I think for treatments like for things like arthritis and things like that, it's a help strengthen the hand. So it's actually like legit treatment, but yeah, that imagery is obviously ties into the title of the movie where he's, you know, his old skin is damaged and worn. And he's shedding that old skin. He's shedding that old persona. He's shedding all that old baggage that he had.
And then I saw another thing online where they said the touchless faucet is another indicator. It's just like he doesn't like to get his hands dirty, right? He doesn't want to touch things directly, so he gets a touchless faucet to turn on his water there, right?
Oh, see, I had somebody else who was playing into like the whole like he was getting arthritis or something was in his hands, and like, oh, he wants this so he doesn't have to use the hands a lot. Because if he didn't want to get his hands dirty, you'd think he'd want to be able to clean his hands.
Well, he's able to clean his hands without touching the actual...
Keeps his hands clean of the goings-on. It was also interesting, too. It was the final shootout at the end, which I thought was really well done as well. It was like it was subtle. It wasn't super over the top. But also, what was your take on Captain Allen telling Benicio Del Toro to get out? Because he tells him when he finds the car, he's like, it's not what you think. So my take on it was that Captain Allen was kind of going along with things because he had no choice because he was afraid for his family and friends. So he had the car in there, and that's why he told him, oh, it's not what you think. And so he was like playing along like he was in the group, but they knew that Captain Allen really wasn't one of them. But what was your take on that whole thing?
Yeah, what I took out of that is that a lot of these guys know they're doing like sort of shady stuff, and Captain Allen would probably have a pretty good handle on that. But he sort of warns Del Toro to like leave the house because Del Toro's already gone to like the higher up guy and given him the evidence.
Chief. Yeah, he went to the chief.
The chief, yeah.
The chief's in on it.
And I think the chief is in on it, and it's just like, that's news to Del Toro, and it's just like, oh my goodness, this goes deeper. And it's like, I think that's the camaraderie and friendship between those guys. Okay. Is that it's just like, you've helped me out in the past. I'm going to help you out right now. You can still get out of this and just like walk away, right? And that was just like the last chance for him to do something redeeming, because essentially the captain has been helping all of his cop lackeys here do whatever they need to do. And maybe he's not like fully invested in it. Like he's holding on, like, because he mentioned that he's holding on to the car for somebody else, right? So I don't think the captain was necessarily like active in the crime. It was just like one of the cops who was involved came to him and be like, can you hide this car for me for a couple weeks, right?
In some way, whether he's directly involved in the crime or not, he's complicit in the crime, and whether or not he's feeling coerced, he's still doing that wrong thing. So from my reading, it was that he was just like, for survival's sake, he's like, hey, we're all like, everybody around him is on the conspiracy. He's like, yeah, I'm in too, because you all have guns and you're not afraid to use them. And then, but even if he's not, even if he's like, oh no, I'm gonna go along with it, just like, I'm not gonna cause any problems, or I'm not gonna say anything because I don't want to, you know, whatever. Either way, he was complicit in those crimes for sure. Yeah.
And I think his murder, when he goes up the stairs and the bulldog cop, I can't remember his name now,
since Wally.
He referred to him as, yeah, the he bulldog. Shoots, right? He shoots the captain dead. And immediately there, dead. It's like, you know, the pecking order, the captain is not on top, or else that probably he's not leading this. It's like bulldog, he's answering to somebody else in this corruption. And I think, it's the chief there for sure.
I think Will Grady and his mom, they were at the top of that scheme, right?
Yeah.
That was a great scene. The little touches. Somebody, I was reading online, somebody pointed out, it's funny, his wife, Judy, Alicia Silverstone, she helps identify the make and model of the car because she said, I drove one like that when I was younger. It's like
somebody blows the case open.
That's probably the same car. Right? Because it's a small town, small community. It was probably like her uncle's car at one point that she was driving around or got sold among the team. It's like, not only did she drive a car like that, that probably was the car she drove when she was a kid.
Yeah. That's a good point.
It may be even the car she lost her virginity in. It's part of the mythology.
Oh, my goodness. So we use a 5-star rating system around here with a possible heart like on top of that, which is modeled after the Letterboxd site, which is where we log all of our movies. So out of 5 stars, where do you land on Reptile?
Yeah, my initial rating was 3 out of 5. Stars on this. I was teetering. I was on the brink of giving it like 3.5, which to me is like anything like 3.5 and above is kind of like, you know, like 2.5 to 3 is kind of like middle range or mediocre. 3.5 and above is like 3.5 to 4 is like good to really, really good.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was on the verge a couple times, but it was just, it needed a bit more polish. It needed to be, if there was more going on during that runtime, this is where people talk about, there's been a huge conversation recently in our culture about the runtimes of movies, right? Specifically with, you look at, you know, Oppenheimer recently and Killers of the Flower Moon with like 3.5 hour runtimes, and people are complaining. And I think people have pointed out rightly online that it's not the length of the movie that matters. It's how you're using that time.
Yeah.
Right. If you are using that time efficiently and effectively, and this definitely felt like there was a little bit more fat that could have been cut, or had that time used kind of more effectively to explore some of the characters or go into more depth about the case, you know, build that tension, or cut it down to make it a solid, you know, hour and a half, 90 minute thriller. But it was like, it was on the verge for me of greatness a bunch of times, but it didn't quite affect me that way. But how about you? What was your grade out of 5 there, Brian?
I ended up at 3.5 on this movie.
There you go.
Like you, I was like waffling between 3 and 3.5.
Yeah.
It was definitely not venturing towards 4. If there was like a true numeric rating on it, it's probably like 3.25. It'd be like, let's just round up for this one. Cause honestly, the performances, like Benicio here,
yeah,
I just love watching him in these movies. And it's just, but one of the issues I had was I couldn't stop thinking about Sicario while I'm watching this movie. And I kept watching for these scenes of like tension and be like, oh man, no movie. Like, this is not anywhere near the level that Sicario is reaching its tension.
Oh,
like,
no.
You're talking about like having that dread, that sense of dread throughout an entire runtime. Sicario does it. Every scene has a bit of like intrigue in it and like danger that Reptile doesn't. And it's just, even when they're looking, like, for some reason, I'm just thinking of, he's looking at the big truck and thinking about buying the truck. I was like, I thought they were going to close the door and maybe have like a little conversation, but it was just like, oh, this car salesman is maybe in on it. Like, he's acting a little shady or something. But no, it's
I was thinking that too,
actually. They're just looking for personal reasons on this vehicle. It's like, so it keeps deflating itself from that tension that is really, I think, beautifully brought up in a few different scenes.
Yeah, the whole church scene when he goes there, that seems like that scene could have been cut. It didn't add anything to the movie at all.
But there could have been so much more going on in that scene that would be like, oh, they just found the paint. And it was just like, who is this guy he's talking to? And maybe they're going to talk to more people.
Yeah, but the whole tension in that scene could have been ratcheted up too. It was like, this is the thing, for all the other scenes that had great tension, and you have something like that, it was like, this should have been super tense. And the way they were filming it with his head kind of up close in the shot, blocking the door, and then he moves. I was like, there should have been more menace there. Right? It felt like more like a, you know, like I always come back to like Fincher Zodiac when Jake Gyllenhaal's in the basement of that dude's house. And you hear like the floorboard squeaking upstairs. And like, that to me is like, that's scarier than most horror movies, like the entirety of most horror movies, just because of the tension you're feeling there. And there was a couple opportunities where they could have had that level of tension. And it's just, it didn't work.
One scene that we mentioned a few times is the dream sequence. And the one shot that I keep thinking about after the movie is when they're in the basement. Del Toro is on the right-hand side of the screen, and he's kind of like leaning against the wall while Justin Timberlake's character is kind of talking about the house, but he knows that, you know, he already knows the house and he's trying to sell it to him, but like half-heartedly. And it's just like, it just lingers on them just well, like long enough that it's just like, what is Del Toro thinking here? Like, is he going to confront him right now? Is he going to go upstairs? Like, what is he going to do next? And then, you know, Timberlake is just like, you want to see the upstairs? He's just like, yeah. And just, they just walk upstairs and be like,
I'd actually forgotten about that. That sequence was so long. They didn't just go right upstairs. They went to the basement first and they were looking. And he was like, that's why it fell off to me. That's why I felt like it felt too real. Right, like if it was a dream sequence, you probably wouldn't have had those moments. Or you in a movie, you wouldn't you wouldn't cut it like that, right?
Maybe, yeah.
It just felt, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's something a little bit that could have been tighter as well, or could have done something to ratchet up that tension. Like, that's where you need like an insert on like their face and to see like what's going on in their eyes, right? Like that, maybe that would have helped, or like, you know, like show that somebody had a weapon or something beforehand, or like have them say something super shady. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. There's a lot of room for improvement in here. And the big takeaway for me is just solid film.
Yep.
Great acting from some of the leads here. Yeah, definitely would recommend if you've listened this far and haven't watched the movie, it's worth checking out. One of the things we do talk about is how this movie ranks in its ratings around the world here, around a couple different sites. Let's put Nathan to his.
Let's do it.
Let's see here. We start with Rotten Tomatoes. The critic rating, they go 0 to 100. They use a percent scale. What is the Rotten Tomato critic rating on Reptile?
I'll go 68.
44%.
What? Like, it's not a masterwork or masterclass in filmmaking, but it's not that bad. Come on, critics.
Yeah. Audience rating?
I'm going to guess higher. Higher than 44. Let's go like 65.
65 is close. It's 71% audience score.
Okay.
IMDb, they use the 10-point system. What's its user's average?
I'm going to say 3.1.
3.1? No, out of 10. So 3.1 is 7.2. Let's say you said 7.2.
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, I think it's 5. I think I jumped ahead to like Letterboxd. No, I'll say like in that case, 5.7.
5.7, it's close. Well, you're a full point off. It's 6.8 on
IMDb. Okay. So far. It's higher than I thought. And
yes, the Letterboxd, I'm guessing you're going to say 3.1.
3.1, yeah.
Yeah, see. Letterboxd average is a 3.0 right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So pretty much, like, if you want to talk about mediocrity, maybe this movie is a prime example of it.
It's good. Yeah, it's down the wire. Like, that's the thing. Like, I wanted so much to like it. I wanted so much to love it. I thought it was going to be another kind of diamond in the rough on Netflix, and it turned out to be more in line with, like, the standard kind of, your standard kind of Netflix. This is exactly the kind of movie when you think about Netflix original. This is exactly the kind of movie you're thinking about, where it's just like, it feels like almost they're padding their library, right?
Yeah. And in that context, I'm like, this almost did, I kind of forgot it was a Netflix original, because I'm just so used to the Netflix originals that are targeted towards me are those big, dumb action movies with all the hottest stars in it, right? You know, like Red Notice and whatnot. It was just like,
well, this was miles better than Red Notice. We'll get that.
Yeah, that's right, the thing. Now. That's why this one, it felt like a little, okay, like, oh, maybe this could have been on a different
maybe
platform.
I'll modify my statement. Maybe this wasn't like this. It was a little bit higher, a little bit better in quality than your standard mediocre Netflix fare. Like, if you're looking at, like, if Red Notice is like the standard of, like, this is what, if, like you're saying, like, if the Netflix AI and corporate goons got together and wrote a movie, that would be Red Notice. And this is miles better than Red Notice. Yeah, 100%.
Like, what AI would have thought to bring Del Toro, Timberlake, and Silverstone together as, like, the main leads on this movie? I don't think any AI would have guessed that, like, especially Alicia Silverstone and Benicio Del Toro would have, like, that, like, connection and chemistry on screen to represent, like, a pretty real...
Apparently, they were in a movie together before, back in the early 2000s, and apparently they dated briefly before, so it was...
I did look that up after. I looked up their ages, because it's just, like, how old... I think there's a 9-year difference between the two of them, so...
Which isn't crazy. Like, they were actually playing...
Yeah.
Like, their ages, actually, so, like, that's actually kind of cool, where it's not like, he's not, it's like, you don't have, like, the 50-year-old dude with some 22-year-old kid, and it's like, oh, my God. Yeah. It's like, no, they felt and looked like, not saying that they looked, quote-unquote, old, but they looked their ages, right? They look like people who were, like, comparable ages, who should be dating each other, and, like, not some kid, not some old, creepy dude dating a 20-year-old or 18-year-old, like they usually have in these movies.
Incredible. I think that's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
As always, we appreciate you hanging out with us today and taking the time to listen to our podcast. You can find us online over at realfilmchronicles.com, where we have not just a repository of podcast episodes, but many of our written reviews as well. If you're up to it, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram as well. All the links should be within the show notes here. So until next time, take care of yourself and others, and be sure to enjoy your film journey.